What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Damo back on the show, and it is Sunday, May. Goddamn, what is today, guys? I don't even know. May 7th. And we just got done with the Eastern Conference game of the day, Celtics and Sixers. The Sixers tied up the series 2-2 because of a crazy shot from James Harden. But we'll do a little bit of playoff stuff, but most of the time today we're going to spend talking about the Wizards, of course. But we do have a special guest today, Mr. Troy Halliburton. Troy, how's it going, man?
Going all right, Brendan and Dominique, man. I'm glad you guys have me on. I'm an avid listener, first time caller, so here to break down some Wizards info.
Well, appreciate that, man. You're probably the person that is most plugged in on Wizards Twitter, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, outside of the reporters, you seem to be the most knowledgeable and plugged in, so may even more so than some of the reporters. So definitely appreciate you taking the time.
I was about to say more so.
Yeah.
I was about to say, look, man, I know a little bit more than some of them.
Yeah. So I'm glad
that you guys wanted to have me on so we can talk about some of the things going on with the Wizards. Now, I feel like as far as Wizards Twitter go, you guys definitely put forth a lot of great content. And like I said, there's not a lot of good Wizards stuff out there. Especially when you consider the fact that that Taylor Leonsis owns NBC Sports Washington, so you are automatically getting a biased point of view from the team's regional sports network. So whenever Wizards fans can actually get unbiased and unabashed Wizards content, I think that's great for the fan base.
Absolutely. And let's not waste any time. Let's just sort of get right into this. And off rip, there was a report that came out that said that Ted Leonsis was maybe a little interested in trading Bradley Beal, and Tommy Shepard kind of pushed back on that. So do you know how truthful that is? And does that play a large part in why he was ultimately let go?
So, yeah, I've done a little bit of research about this since my last podcast appearance. Shout out to the guys over at Locked On Wizards. But, my research, I haven't heard that. Like, from my understanding, I think that Ted and Brad's relationship is just as strong as it has been in years past. And that I don't think that Ted really has any really initiative to want to trade Brad at this point. And so, I'm not saying that wherever that report came from is completely fabricated, but I'm just saying that I have not heard that.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely didn't make sense because I truly felt like that if Tommy wanted to keep his job and if the owner said trade the guy, and knowing that Beal has had decent value in multiple suitors over the years, you figured they would have made the move on that. And also that it seemed like maybe that would have bought Tommy some time, considering that at that point the roster is probably going a little bit more of a rebuilding direction. So you figure Tommy could have bought a little bit more time with making that kind of move too. In terms of the mandate to win, and I'm sure you've already touched on this, what was sort of the directive at the deadline from ownership? Because I know you had mentioned at the time that Tommy was GMing for his job, and some games later you don't even make the play-in and he's gone. So what exactly was the mandate for him? What was he supposed to do at the deadline?
Well, I think that he was supposed to put the team in a position to win. And so when you look at from my relationship with Ted and Zach Leonsis, I can say that they very much care about making the playoffs. They very much care about getting those playoff gates. Like they very much care about being able to say, oh, we made the playoffs in two of the last many year or three of the last. They care about those, just being able to say that. And so I know that bar is very low for Wizards fans, but according to the ownership group, I think that was always a goal that they had in mind. And so when Tommy Shepard started making moves when he did not make any moves at the pay deadline, and then came back to them at the end of the season without really a plan for a course of action, I think that he put himself in a position where they almost could not bring him back.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that they were supposed to find a way to get the team better. And when you trade Rui Hachimura for Kendrick Nunn and a few second-round picks, and the second-round pick that they'll have this year could very well end up being a useful player for them. But based on where they're picking, is that player necessarily going to be better than Rui Hachimura, who's now had some big moments for the Lakers in the playoffs? You know, I'm not sure about that. Now I can understand not wanting to pay a guy, especially when he was a little bit inconsistent, right? So I could understand the idea of trying to trade him and get ahead of it so you're not forced to pay him or match an offer in the offseason. And I get that, but I feel like the return just simply wasn't good enough, especially for a team that had said that they were trying to make playoffs down the stretch. And the BS about trying to give Denny more playing time and all that. What exactly was your – and then, Damo, I don't want to keep you silent. I'll let you get in on this. But what was your point of view on trading Rui and the whole idea that Denny was all of a sudden just going to be unlocked?
Well, I think that that whole narrative about trying to get Denny more minutes is just this Tommy BSing. Right, and we can go through like countless times where Tommy BS the media and BS fans during his tenure here. But from the Rui Hachimura trade, I would say that, okay, we got to look at a couple things. I'd say the first thing was that Rui's relationship with the Wizards organization had begun to sour a little bit. And I wouldn't say that there was like any beef there, but it was just like when he first came in, they really rolled out the red carpet for him in a way that they hadn't done for anybody, like since probably like the height of John Wall. Like, and I think that they, the way that they were treating him, you know, it really made him like the focal point within the organization. And so I think that gradually over time, that just began to diminish a lot. And so I think that, you know, like everybody here is human. And I think that Rui began to sense that, you know, they're not really treating me like they used to. And, you know, I think that, you know, especially with when you look at Wes Unseld Jr. and the new coaching staff, I don't think that Wes really ever really prioritized Rui in a way that the organization, not in the way that the organization wanted him to, because, you know, I think that Tommy had begun to sour a little bit. I'd say this all really started with Rui. When he came into the, what was that, the 2021 season, when he missed time because of, you know, I guess he said he was going through some mental health issues, or, you know, he didn't show up to the training camp. And I think that that was like kind of the beginning of the end of the souring of Rui's relationship with the Wizards organization. And so, and like I said, I don't think that it was a thing of, you know, Rui having beef with the organization. I just think that, you know, that they had treated him like a king, and, you know, then they started treating him like the prince, and then they started treating him like, you know, the court jester, and then it was just like, he's like, what's going on here? And so I think that that was just like a deal, and like you said, Brendan, they made the decision that they weren't going to pay him this summer, so at that point, you got to trade him or lose him for nothing.
Right.
No doubt.
Damo, we're going to get into more about Tommy's tenured overall and maybe some of the mistakes he made along the way, because the reason he was let go, I'm sure, was not just because of what transpired this season. But is there anything you wanted to add on from any of these topics, or anything you wanted to ask Troy before we move on to that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a shame with the Rui situation, because he was coming off such an amazing high. You know, that game, I think it was game 4 in the playoffs versus the Sixers. He was the reason they won that game. I think he had like 20-12. And it was like, oh, you know, Rui is, that's the guy. That's the next star we're going to have to play next to Beal. And then he just left and, you know, missed all the training camp, missed like the first, I think it was the first 40 games. And then in that period of time, you saw Kuzma kind of go from this like 13 point per game, you know, fifth option to this 25 point per game, you know, looking like maybe he could be an all-star type piece. So it's just wild how that relationship just kind of soured, because that's the first time I've heard, you know, that the relationship with the org just had already begun to sour. It's just unfortunate, man, because I really thought Rui was going to be the next piece. And then for it to kind of just go left like that with him dipping and then Kuzma developing and then, you know, then him just basically ended up getting traded for some second round picks, man. Like, I wouldn't have predicted it going like that at all.
Yeah, and Dama, I think you brought up a great point when you talk about Kuzma's emergence. And I think that really also played just as much as a reason as to why Rui isn't here. Because it's while Rui is, you know, separating from the organization, you have this other guy who not only on the court is you know, filling in Rui's responsibilities, but off the court, you know, he's really turning into like kind of like the main focal point of the organization. Like, and you know, and I think that all of this actually comes back. Kuzma is able to do that is because Brad's not a leader. And so that's why Kuzma is able to come in and entrench himself as, you know, a focal point of this organization and really make it seem like, oh, like they needed to keep him because of the things that he's doing that Brad isn't doing. Like, if Brad's a better leader, then we don't need Kuzma to come in and do any of this stuff. And then he's just a guy. He's just a role player. But, like, Kuzma had really, by the time, like, the trade deadline came, the Wizards were probably scared to trade him because they were like, yeah, this dude is kind of actually the heart of the team.
Yeah. I mean, the games I've gone to, it feels like it's Kuzma's team.
It kind of is, like, you know what I'm saying? And Brad, don't get me twisted. Brad's definitely the best player, and Brad definitely has the most control within as far as, like, making front office decisions or suggesting front office decisions and things of that nature. But when it comes to the day-to-day nature of the team and going to practice and, you know, looking for leadership and stuff like that, Kuzma have really become that guy.
Yeah.
Troy, I did want to ask you, we talked about Rui going for second-round picks and maybe how that wasn't really his value. Given that he was expiring, I'm not sure I entirely agree with that. But I did want to ask you because it seemed like the going back to the trade deadline, it seemed like a lot of these wings and forwards were going for second-round picks. I mean, really the only player that I can remember off the top of my head that went for first-round picks is Jakob Poeltl. So I was curious on what you thought about how the deadline transpired and did teams not want to give up picks because of these couple of draft classes coming up and what do you think that does to set the market for trades for those types of guys this offseason?
Well, I think that's a good question. I like how this conversation is flowing because I think that really the Wizards didn't make any trades at the deadline because I don't think that Tommy Shepard really liked any of the trade, you know, the offers that he was getting. I honestly think that he overvalued the Wizards players in a way that, you know, really kind of took him aback when the trade deadline actually came and him realizing that he couldn't just trade away some of these pieces for, you know, half-ass trade offers. And so I really think that he probably mis-evaluated his own players in a way that he felt like that it was he put himself in a position where he felt like he would be better off keeping those guys and trying to compete and, you know, trading them away for nothing and definitely not competing.
And so recap some of that. Let's actually get into more of Tommy Shepard's tenured overall because I know that you wanted to talk about this and we're also curious about what sort of led up to all this because again it wasn't just from this season why he was let go. This was a four-year stint that he had and I would call 2.5 of those years a failure because the team got better and so naturally the mandate changes. But I wanted to get your take on just how everything happened overall, because at the beginning it seemed promising and he was making the right sort of moves. You know, there were a couple things here and there. Dama, you remember, I didn't exactly like the Shabazz Napier trade. I mean, little things like that, but it seemed like generally speaking, things were going in the right direction and he had the right idea. And then when it was time to put together a winner, he just couldn't do it. So take us through everything that happened over the last these last 4 years and ultimately what led to this decision.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at Tommy's track record, generally speaking, he did a decent job of a lot of his transactions. But when you like when you take a macro view of all of this and you look at it from a bigger scope, like he made some really, really critical basketball mistakes that really showed that he probably wasn't fit for the job. And I think that like me and Domo have talked about this on Twitter a lot over the last couple of years. Like today's NBA is made up of a point guard play. And the fact that the Wizards could never get a point guard, like they besides the one Westbrook year under Tommy Shepard, I mean, he almost set the team up for failure. Like when you look at his first year, he came in, got when John was hurt, he went out and got Isaiah Thomas to be the starting point guard. Like what? Like that was the dumbest decision that a GM could make. Like no GM who goes out and gets Isaiah Thomas to be the starting point guard of their team. This is after Isaiah Thomas and already busted up his hip. Like he already cooked on the basketball court, and we brought him in to be the starting point guard. Like that to me was a telltale sign that this guy doesn't understand the game of basketball right now. And he really didn't put the team in a position to win. So when you look at 3 of the 4 years that he was GM, the team did not have a point guard at all. And they're out there getting cooked every night when you can't stop anybody at the point of attack and your point guard on the other side can't get by anybody off the dribble.
And so what specifically did you make of, I mean, obviously they turned Westbrook into some pieces, but let's go back even to when the Westbrook deal was made originally when we acquired him. What was your personal thinking about that? Was that the only way that they could have gotten rid of John? I mean, even in hindsight, would you rather have just kept John and see what happened? What was your thought about that at the time? What do you think about it now? And how do you think that that deal has sort of impacted where the Wizards are now?
I think personally, they should have kept John and see what they could have what they could have done. But at the same time, when you look at it just in a vacuum, him trading John Wall and a first round pick for Russell Westbrook was a good trade because they were able to take that Westbrook and they were able to take a distressed asset in Westbrook, increase his value, and then also turn around and then flip him for even more assets. And so I don't think that was the problem. I think that, you know, there's some things I didn't like the way that he handled the John Wall trade. You know, like to me, I felt like it showed really poor. What's the word I want to use? Because I don't want to be sitting up here calling Tommy names. Like I think it just showed poor judgment and morality and ethics on Tommy Shepard's part, the way he handled the whole John Wall situation, like him just blatantly lying to people. Lying to Wall, lying to the media. And like, and my thing is that he told so many unnecessary lies. It's like, yeah, we understand that, okay, like you don't have to tell everybody the truth, but you don't have to lie either. Like, and I think that he went so far out of his way to like create this like environment around in a culture within the organization that I think that just really kind of just soured a lot of the vibes around the team. And so when you look at the Westbrook trade, like I like I said, in a vacuum, I think that it was a good deal for the value that they got, even though that first round draft pick is still kind of floating out there. And so that trade really can't be graded until that pick situation is kind of resolved. But I thought that he did a fantastic job of, like I said, taking a distressed asset in Westbrook, increasing his value, and then the next summer turning and flipping that into even more assets. And now what he did with those assets is kind of a beginning of a problem. And instead of like taking that and doing good things, he really kind of squandered away a grand opportunity. And that really put him in a position where he was kind of behind the eight ball for the last 2 years trying to make something happen.
I think what was irritating about the John Wall move, and again, you said it, is just how it happened, not necessarily that it happened. And I want to ask you, it's more of, I guess, just a philosophical question and what your personal thinking is on the matter, but Tommy seems to be the type of GM that wants to have relationships with the players, that wants to get to know them as people. But with that comes a little bit of bias. And that's not just in sports, that's in any type of work environment. You know, you try and build relationships because you want everyone to, you know, like you and all that. But then once you build relationships, even if people start not performing, well, you're going to say, well, I like this person a little bit more personally. I know that he cares. And so you may start to let some things slide, maybe in the case of why we kept Brad for as long as we did. But I just want to ask you philosophically, do you think that GMs should try to be more friendly and interact with players? Or do you think that when you're in that position that you should be a little bit more distant?
I think that people should build genuine relationships with people no matter what that looks like. And so I think that Tommy is the type of guy who says what's good, what he thinks you want to hear, and not building a genuine relationship. And so I think that a lot of those guys, you might think Tommy Shepard's looking out for you. No, he's looking out for himself, and he's not building a genuine relationship. He's really just, you know, like a car salesman. He's just trying to say whatever it is to make sure that you get off the car, to get off the lot with that car. And, like, I think that that really goes to some of his character things, like, about him. Like this is a guy, like, just some of the things that I've witnessed over the years, it's just like I honestly began to not trust the guy.
Domo, is there anything you wanted to add at this point?
No, I was going to say, you know, that John Wall trade, I just wonder, like, you know, that the pick, the first round pick that's tied up in it is kind of preventing them from making other moves to kind of get them to another level. And I just wonder if Tommy had addressed the point guard position in the draft and then you kept Wall in your pick. And the same thing you did with Russ, with rehabbing his value for a season and then flipping him. Could you have just dumped? Would you have been better off just doing that with Wall while also having that young point guard on the roster developing? And then you're in a much better situation now, having the young point guard, flipping Wall for whatever assets you can get, and then having all of your draft picks to be able to make moves. I just, you know, I go back and forth with that a lot, because like Troy said, in a vacuum, you turn John Wall into Russ. You turn Wall and a pick into Russ, and then you turn Russ into, you know, Kuzma, KCP. So in a vacuum, it's good, but I just wonder if they had went a different direction with a little bit of patience, would they be in a better situation right now?
Yeah, well, let's not forget, they turned Russ into Kuzma, KCP, Montrezl Harrell, and a first-round pick. Now, mind you, they blew two of those assets already. Then they blew the KCP asset by trading up for Monty Morris. So now they really only left with Kuzma from that deal. We turned John Wall and all that's left is Kuzma and Monty Morris. And so now, when you look at it now, it's just like, man, what are we doing? Exactly. Then look, got that pick and they turned that into Isaiah Thomas. I'm not even counting him as an asset anymore. So I mean, it's really comical when you think about it. But yeah, like, man, I don't know, man. I think that the way that Tommy did it, like I said, in a vacuum, it was a smart move. But Donald, you said it, man. When you talk about addressing the point guard in the draft, that's why I said before that the biggest mistake he made was not drafting Tyrese Halliburton. And this is a thing where I think, and then I look back at Tommy, this has been a thing over the course of his career, like that he seems to be a guy who questions himself at the last minute too many times. Because Tyrese already said, the Wizards said they was going to pick him. And then all of a sudden, they weren't. Like I said, like I was reporting last year at the trade deadline, that the Wizards going to do this. They're going to make trades. And then all of a sudden, at the last minute, he decided he's not going to do it. And the thing is, it's like, why do all this due diligence and do all this stuff just to make a flip at the last minute? He questioned his own decision-making too much.
Since we did bring up Kuzma, and obviously there's a huge decision, we can sort of try and transition this into to an update on who the candidates might be for the position at this point. But obviously a very big decision, two big decisions potentially, assuming Porzingis does indeed opt out of that option that he has. But I want to ask you now, number one, with Kuzma, did they have suitors and they were just unwilling to move him because they wanted to keep him for this playoff push and they want to re-sign him and run it back? And then the second part of that is, Do you think that he's a player that with this other core group of guys, Beal and KP, is it worth keeping them together? And is he worth being a piece to build around going forward?
So from my understanding, they had suitors. They just weren't going to get anything back that would help them this season. So they, sure. if they were to trade Kuz, that would have made this that basketball team worse. Like from that, that's from my understanding. Right. They would have got draft compensation and, you know, things, future assets, instead of a player that could help them right now. And I think that fundamentally that anybody looking at the situation would know that that mid three that they had and they kept calling a big three wasn't going to be enough to get them to the playoffs. And so that might have been the best move. But I don't think that Tommy Shepherd was willing to trade Kuzma and not get back the requisite help that he felt like he needed for that season.
And so before we transition into talking about the candidates and who may be in the mix here, I do want to ask you, you're the GM of this team. What is the direction that you're taking with this group in the offseason? Are you re-signing Kuzma? Are you going to re-sign KP to a big deal if he opts out? Would you try and trade Beal? Are there any young guys you would try and move for maybe a bigger piece? Would you trade the draft pick they have this year? I'm curious as to what you personally would do and what you think the direction they should go in is.
Well, I mean, I mean that's tough. That's a loaded question for sure. I've been on team trade Bradley Beal for a while now, but honestly, I honestly don't think it's the right time to do it. I honestly don't. I think that I don't think his value is as high as everyone thinks that it is right now.
Right. The time to do it was 2 years ago.
The time to do it was 2 years ago, and the time could possibly do it. It could be at the trade deadline. I wouldn't try to trade him right now because I don't think anybody's desperate enough right now to go out and try to give up what they want, what the Wizards would want for Bradley Beal. So if to me, I would bring Beal back and try to get his value back up and just wait. It's like the timing just isn't right around the league. It has to be like a nice like timing thing for everything to come together. I think that I would try to resign Porzingis to a long-term deal. And I'm gonna be honest with you, Damo, this is one where I gotta say, me and you had a little Twitter discussion about Porzingis versus Jaren Jackson Jr. And while I still think Jaren Jackson Jr. is better, it's a lot closer than I was willing to admit when we had that discussion. He's healthy. He's probably a top five center in the league.
When you throw him in the playoffs, there's some more data added, and Jaren Jackson was looking a little suspect.
I mean, he also was out there blocking the hell out of people's shots too. I think like Jaren Jackson is what he is, but to me, I think that I still would have Jaren Jackson in front of Porzingis. I think Porzingis is probably like the fifth best center in the NBA. And to me, that's a lot of value right there. Like I tell you this, I tell you who I would take Porzingis over, Sabonis from Sacramento. Like I can't do that with no dude who can't score on a smaller player in the post. And if it's one thing Porzingis can do, he can go out there and get some buckets. So, you know, I think that that's a guy who, you know, if he can show that he can continue to stay healthy, I think that they'd be smart to lock him up to a long-term deal. You know, try to bring his per year salary down. So I think he has a $36 million player option. I would try to lock him up to something around 30 a year for, you know, a couple more years and try to build around him as one of the foundational pieces of the franchise. And so that would leave Kuzma. I mean, I would tell Kuzma and his agent to go out there and try to get the best offers they can and try to see if they can do a sign and trade. Because I don't think that and today is like I think that Kuzma would be a great fit for, you know, a team to be the fourth or fifth best player. I don't think he's a third option on a good basketball team. And to me, he's just a little bit too inefficient with his scoring and not much of a defensive stopper to make him like a real number three option. You know, I think that his value is probably at the high that it'll probably be. And so I would look to try to see about, you know, what they could get for him. And honestly, this team needs more draft assets in the future. Like, we got to look at it from multiple angles. Like, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever for a team to be near the tax line and not making the play-in. Like, that just does not compute. And so at some point, you have to start breaking down money. And Kuzma just can't get that money. It's just not enough. Yeah.
So that'll lead us into what is good about this job. If you're a GM candidate, Troy, what is positive about taking this job from a team makeup standpoint? We know that Ted's going to be loyal. I'm sure he'll give him a decent amount of money. I'm sure that this person will have a huge role in Monumental Basketball. But from the Wizard side of things, the current team makeup, the kind of decisions that this said person would have to make this offseason, what is positive about it?
I'd say the positives for if I was an executive and I was looking at this job, the things that would make the two things that would make this job appealing to me are low expectations and almost not a blank canvas, but you could get to a blank canvas with this team very easily. And so those two things. So like the expectation, you take this job, somebody come in here and get us to the conference finals, they're gonna build a statue for them. You know, like the expectations are so low. Like you can come in and do like just the bare minimum and have like a lot of success. And then, like I said, the other thing is like, yes, I know that the books look bad now, but I mean, you could get them. You could clear these books easily and two moves, and you're looking at a blank canvas for the 2024-2025 season. Like, and so when you look at those two things, I think that makes this job very appealing. And in Washington, the third thing is that the Washington, D.C. area is a great sports town. Like, and just because the Wizards haven't had success over the last 40 years doesn't mean that, you know, that this isn't a great sports town and that, you know, that the fans here, I mean, they're just waiting for somebody to come in and make this team a winner.
Now, there was an article that was posted maybe about Scott Perry. I know that Bob Myers has been mentioned. It seems like Masai Ujiri is going to stay put at this point. What have you – do you have an update at this point on who they're interested in, on who maybe they've talked to, and ultimately who do you – I know that we're not going to hold you accountable if you get this wrong, but if there was a water gun to your head, who do you think as of now is going to get the job?
Water gun to my head. Today, water gun to my head, I would say Trajan Langdon. Water gun to my head.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. Trajan Langdon's been, his name's been rising a lot. And so 2 weeks ago, I would have thought that it would have been Milt Newton. And I think that Milt definitely has a lot of friends within this organization as far as like the ownership group and just other people within the organization. And I think that he's a very valuable candidate. I think that the fan base and others have been kind of down on his candidacy just because of, you know, his tenure here under Ernie and Tommy. And so, you know, I think that there's enough smoke out there around, you know, the fact that he was here under Ernie and Tommy that I think that they might keep him from getting his job. And even though I think he's a definitely a qualified candidate, you know, I think Milt is a guy, he's from D.C., went to Coolidge High School. You know, he worked in the organization for a long period of time. He has a lot of respect in the city. He has a lot of respect in the NBA. There's a lot of respect inside the Wizards organization, but I honestly think that, you know, when you're looking at the fact that Ted went out and had that whole search firm and ended up with Tommy Shepard, I think that if he goes out and hires Milt Newton, that it would definitely create a narrative of I don't know. Yeah, it would create a narrative of them just going out and doing more of the same. And so I think that it really kind of hurts his candidacy. But I think Trajan Langdon has definitely been emerging over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I had reported that that Milt got an interview. And then I saw that Ayla Wallace reported that Trajan Langdon got an interview. And so I can confirm that. I confirmed that, you know, he did talk to the organization. And, you know, I think that he kind of fits the mold of, you know, I think, number one, I think that Ted wants to get somebody young and black in here. And I think that, you know, I think that Trajan just kind of fits the bill of a guy who has, you know, put in his time and put the work in over the course of his NBA executive career. And that I think that it might just be his time for an opportunity.
Now, going to Bob Myers.
I'm glad that you went there, because I think that, I mean, really everything that happens over the next week will greatly determine what kind of happens with Bob Myers. Like if AD keeps playing like he's playing and they bounce out the Warriors, and I think that Bob Myers, I think it really all comes down to him. If he wants this job, I think it's his job. So but I think that he's going to wait this out and see how this plays out with the Warriors and their season.
Gotcha. Domba, before we touch on playoffs really quickly, anything you wanted to add, any last questions for Troy?
If you were ranking them outside of obviously Bob Myers, you know, that's a top tier guy there. But if you were ranking the names out of there, who would your personal favorite be as far as a fit and a pick for the Wizards as GM?
Man, you know what? The more and more I've been researching and more I've been talking to people, I think that Milt Newton might be the best fit, honestly. And the thing is, like, I think that when you look at the Bucks and that organization and the things that, like, he really had a great hand in putting that team together. And so, and when you look at that and then just the everything that I've heard about him, like him being a straight up guy, him being like, it's different. Like, I thought that the Tommy hire was, they hired Ernie Jr. Milt is not Ernie Jr. So that's the thing. Like, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't, I see people on the internet, they're saying, oh, you know, but they shouldn't hire him because he worked under them for 10 years. And it's just like, you know, in a vacuum, yes, I can understand why people are saying that. But this, he's not those guys, though. He's not Tommy. He's not Ernie. He's a different person. Like, he runs things differently. He operates differently. Whereas, like, the Tommy Shepherd hire was them hiring Ernie Jr.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting.
So yeah, if it was me, I would say Milt would be the best candidate for the job, and then Bob Myers. Because the Bob Myers thing is like, well, the Bob Myers thing, he's going to come in and going to run the organization in a way that I'm not even sure if Ted and Zach are ready to give up that type of power yet. And so I think that might create more conflict than solutions, like, because he's gonna come in and want to run things his way, and Ted has been a little bit too hands on over the last couple of years as far as like things that he wants within the organization. Like, that's the only reason why I think Brad is even still here. Like, if anything, like, I've been hearing the opposite of what was been reported. And maybe Tommy wanted to trade. Maybe Tommy wanted to get up off of Brad like a couple of years ago. But Ted is like, nah, because he knew that all of these things were coming, because he knew he wanted to buy the regional sports network. He knew that, you know what I'm saying, like that the way that the organization is going to be transitioning, and he needed a star player here. So I think that Ted would probably, you know, I don't know. I just I think it would be an interesting working dynamic between Ted Leonsis and Bob Myers.
So what at the end of the day makes Milt that puts him over Bob Myers. And I know that everyone can say now, like, well, the Warriors' job is easy because, yeah, you have Curry, Clay, Draymond, Looney, and you just plug in the rest of those guys. But they had to get there to begin with, right? So I'm just curious on how you view that situation now. And I know you said he's your number two option, and that's not far down the list or anything, but I'm just curious on what would put Milt ahead of Bob Myers, you know, the guy that's won four championships. And depending on how the series goes, I mean, they're still in play for a fifth here.
Well, I think that one of the big, if I were a consultant and I were talking to Ted Leonsis, and one of the things that I would say, one of his biggest problems with the Wizards is the lack of connectivity between the organization and the community in which they serve. And so I don't think that the people in DC identify with the Wizards. I think it's been like that for his, so he's been with the owner since what, 2010. I just don't think that the Wizards are connected in the community in a way that, like, I'm not talking about like going out and doing community service or doing stuff like that. I'm talking about like just being a part of the fabric and the culture of the city. The Wizards aren't that. And I think that because Milt is from DC and because he is and he has been an executive at the highest levels of basketball, like, I think that he is the one person who could actually draw that connection between the Wizards and the DMV and to make this team a part of the culture of the DMV. And I honestly think that's one of Ted's biggest problems with the way that he runs the team. Like, nobody cares about the Wizards. Ain't nobody talking about the Wizards on 106.7 or 980. Ain't nobody talking about the Wizards in podcast form unless it's y'all or Locked On Wizards or Matt Moderna. Like, you know, talking about, this is an NBA franchise we talking about here. We got like 10 people who care, who cover the team and care about the team. Like, I think that they need to make a connection with the city and the team that hasn't been done over the last 10 years. And I think Milt would be the best person to do that.
Now, I'm curious because a lot of those same points that you made, a lot of those same things were said when the Wizards hired Wes Unseld Jr. So I'm curious how you think that has played out, because I know you mentioned.
Yeah, I think those points were made, but I don't. Wes Unseld Jr., to me, Wes Unseld Jr. is not a leader. Like, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I like it. Like, just to me, like, personally, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Like, to me personally, I don't think he is like an alpha personality type of person where, you know, he even demands that or commands that type of respect from, like to me, he's a great, like, I honestly don't even know what to think of Wes Unseld Jr. But I just, if people were trying to make Wes Unseld Jr. be the answer to that problem, I don't think that was ever the solution.
Now, I do want to ask you, and I've mentioned this on the last podcast that I did with Greg Finberg, and then I did mention it on the previous podcast with Damo, but I'm very much so hoping that this plays out how it played out with the New York Giants. John Mara wanted to keep Joe Judge, but once he found the GM candidate that he wanted, he said, I'm going to want my own guy. Do you think that's a situation that could be at play here, or you think no matter what, Wes is going to be the head coach on opening night?
I think no matter what, Wes Unseld Jr. is going to be the head coach on opening night. I think that, like I've mentioned this before on Twitter, on different platforms, his father's bus sits in the arena. I think that has bought him at least the job to start opening night. Now, whether he finishes next season, I'm not sure, but I think the fact that his father is the most legendary player in the history of the franchise, I think that has bought him at least the job through on opening night.
There was a report out there from Ramona Shelburne that was saying that there was a chance that Wes may in fact have a little bit of say in who is brought in for the GM candidate. Now, I was telling Dom before we got on, like, it's one thing to keep your head coach informed on what's going on, and it's an entirely different thing to for him to give input on the guy. And I'm curious as to whether or not that has any truth to it.
Yeah, I haven't heard that in particular, but I do think that, like, if they've made a commitment to him to be the head coach for the season, and I think it would make a little bit of sense that he would have a little bit of say. I'm not saying that his word is going to hold sway over everybody, but I think that they're definitely going to ask his opinion. Like, if he goes in and say, man, oh, I can't work with this guy, oh, I don't know, but I don't, then, you know, I don't think that they would go out and hire anybody that I think that he would be directly opposed to. And I do think that, you know, that also probably helps Milt Newton's candidacy, because those two were close. So I think that, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how it all plays out. But I don't think that Wes has that much power within the organization. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think we definitely got to talk about, you know, some of those transactions that took place with the coaching staff. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he didn't really have control over his own coaching staff for the last 2 years. So now he's going to be picking a GM. I just don't see that happening completely. But I do think that they're showing that they're willing to listen to him a little bit more by allowing him to let go of, you know, saying two people on the staff, and he's going to be able to finally bring in some of his own people.
As we get closer and closer to the end of the season, and the playoffs has been going on for a little while now, who did you have winning the title at the beginning of the season? What have you made of the playoffs so far? Any surprises? And who do you think at this point will win the championship?
Yeah, well, I had the Bucks winning the title before the season, and I had the Bucks winning the title before the playoffs started, and now the Bucks are sitting at home. So that's very interesting. But right now, I would have to say I think that Denver has the best shot, because they have, to me, the most complete team. They have a dominant player. Like, man, Jokic is a bad man. Like, you know, I'm team Embiid all the way. I think Embiid should have won the MVP, but Jokic is probably just as good as Embiid. I'm willing to say that. And if you look at the way that they've played over the course of the season and over the course of these playoffs, that I think that they're clicking on all cylinders in a way that can lead to a championship. So if I had to pick one team right now, I'd pick the Denver Nuggets.
And who out of the East do you think is going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals? Because this bracket is busted.
Ah, man. I'll still go with the Celtics, because I think that they have the most talent out of the teams that are left in the East. The coaching seems to be an issue with them right now. If their players can come out and just play more consistently, and this is the series is tied 2-2, so it'll be a best of three series, and they have home court advantage against Philadelphia 76ers, and I think they're crushing whoever comes out of that Miami New York series. I think I like the Celtics to come out.
Damo and I didn't have any disagreements on the first round. We will recap the second round or get more into the second round later this week. But he did have Milwaukee winning the championship as well before the playoffs started. I did have Milwaukee going to the finals. I'm still going to ignorantly go with the Warriors. I know a lot of people are saying that they were going to lose to Sacramento in the first round. And then as I keep trying to remind people, there is not one motherfucker with more nerve in this league than Steph Curry. And when he is on, that's the best damn player in the league. And I don't know how often you're going to see that the remainder of the playoffs. And maybe that the Lakers just have too much size. They have too much talent to overcome maybe some of the depth issues that the Warriors have. But I am still going to say that the Warriors are going to win the title. And I think that the Heat are going to be the team that represents the East in the NBA Finals. Damo, what do you think about
me? Unless AD gets hurt, man, yeah. I don't see them coming out this Lakers series, because AD is just so dominant.
Yeah, I just don't think the Warriors have enough depth, man. Like, yeah. Especially if we have them playing the Celtics, like
they have Moses Moody to make plays. Like,
yeah, like it's no way, man. Like, the Celtics got two dudes off their bench that are starters, like Brogdon and White. Like, those dudes can play. Then you got Horford playing out of his mind, and Robert Williams ain't even really done nothing yet, and that's an all NBA caliber defender. Like, I just don't think the Warriors have a shot once they get if they can get past the Lakers and they do make it to the final. I just don't see a scenario of them winning. I still got the Lakers over them. But my pick before the KD trade was the Nuggets going to the finals. That's looking like that's probably going to happen because they just everybody accepts their role and they don't deviate from it. And then, like you said, Jokic is a top two player in the league. Top one, like
man, he gets busy for real. Like this dude is serious, man.
he do everything. So then you got nothing but shooters around him. Jamal Murray always turn the sliders up come playoffs, and then you know they deep. So like they can go, they can match up with the Celtics if that's who they see there. So I can see that. To me, they probably the best team left playing right now.
I'm with you on the Nuggets, man. They've been balling, and like I said, they got the depth, they got the size, they got the shooting. Like they're a complete basketball team.
No, with the Nuggets, it's like the Sixers for me, where it's like I got to see them do it before I can predict them to do it. You know what I mean? Like it's just I've seen it so many times at this point, and I'm like. Until they actually do it, until they actually get to the finals, then I'll be like a real believer in them. And don't get me wrong, like I'm not one of those people that thinks that making it to the second round every year is a disappointment, because I would rather much that than what the Wizards do now. I think that the Nuggets are a very good team. Obviously, they have one of the best players in the NBA. They have a very deep team that the KCP trade has worked wonders for them. Jamal Murray has been playing a lot better. So, I mean, I definitely agree that they're as much talented as any one of these teams remaining left in the playoffs. I got to see them do it before I believe it. And that's just where I'm at with it. Troy, is there anything you wanted to discuss more or anything you wanted to plug before we cut this?
Yeah, no, nothing to plug, man. I'm really taking it easy on the NBA coverage right now. I'm really waiting for this lottery day so I can see what kind of transitions I'm gonna be making with my basketball coverage. Right now we're just kind of just chilling. I'm just sitting back, keeping my ears to the ground, trying to make sure I can gather as much information I can for the Wizards fans out there, so we don't get left in the dark.
Well, we definitely appreciate it, man. And thank you again for coming on and talking with Damo. And I definitely appreciate your insight and opinions and all that. For those of you that don't know who Troy is, I don't know why you don't, but follow him on Twitter at Troy Halliber. Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review or leave us a negative review, whatever you're feeling. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.